You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Welcome to Nobody Told Me. I'm Laura Owens.
And I'm Jan Black.
How can you create and maintain a loving relationship? Do conflict and dissatisfaction in a relationship mean you're headed for a breakup? And how can you navigate the storms that are almost certain to crop up between you and your romantic partner?
Our guest on this episode, longtime therapist and couples coach Linda Carroll, has plenty of experience answering questions just like those. She's the author of the new book, Love Skills: The Keys to Unlocking Lasting Wholehearted Love. Linda, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, I'm so happy to be on the show in wonderful San Francisco.
Yes. Why did you decide to write the latest book?
Well, that in and of itself is a whole show. I wrote Love Cycles based on a class that I've been teaching for many, many years, and lots of training I've done in all my years as a therapist. And it was suggested to me that I write the workbook, that I put the workbook together as a companion book to Love Cycles, my first book, and that I show people how to get through these stages that I talked about in Love Cycles. And so it started out as a workbook, but you know, if I don't know if you've ever written anything, but my experience in writing is that sometimes the book has a different idea than what you thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And I started writing it as a workbook, and it actually has become its own book. Certainly there are exercises, and there's lots of techniques in the book. I talk about different issues and ways to get through them that are pretty tried and truly tested. But the book also has a lot more content in it than I thought it would. And surprisingly enough, I started to write a story about my husband and myself. And it was in the first part where I talked about the pillow talk exercise. And I was going to change the names and make them two different people that were not identifiable, but I didn't do it. And I said, what do you think if I tell this? He said, tell everything. He said, just don't exaggerate it. Tell it like it happened. I don't care what you write as long as it's true. So I said, well, I'll see. So as I continued to write, because so much of the things that I've learned were really fought for, mostly not in my professional life, but in my personal life. And he and I were he was my trial person to work a lot of this out with and to try a lot out with, and it transformed our relationship. And so I put a lot of that in the book, including the places that we really fell down and did not do it right. And suddenly the book took on its own life force, and it became a whole different book with a lot of reflection, personal reflection, as well as kind of a composite of what I've learned in 40 years of working with endless couples all over the country. So that's a long answer to your question.
You're so honest in the book, and one of the things you say is, frankly, that contrary to conventional wisdom, people don't just meet, fall in love, overcome a few trials, and live happily ever after.
No,
why not?
Because it's not the human condition. You know, the human condition is one that has struggle in it. And think about this. What would you buy this book? There were two people born, and they had a wonderful family and a wonderful life, and they went into wonderful professions. They had perfect children. They lived happily together without a crossword for 75 years, and one day they both died at the same moment. You know, no one would buy that book. We want real, and we want stories about people that overcome struggle, because that's part of our human condition. To be a human being is to move into all kinds of chapters of life. And I've just been to San Francisco meeting an old friend. I hadn't seen her since we were 16, and we met on Union Street, which was where we last saw each other. And we talked about our lives, and it's been like 50 years, 50, 55, 75, 60, 5 years since we've seen 60 years. And we talked about the stories of our life, and we just were glued to each other for 2.5 hours as we talked. And it wasn't the story of it's all wonderful. It was where we struggled, where we overcame the struggles, how we got to be where we are. And that was an incredibly rich experience for me, because she has been into she has a lot of work that she's done on herself and in her life to get herself into the amazing woman that she is today. And those are the stories that we love to hear, because I think we all struggle with the human condition. How can we not? So when you put two people together, you have two people who are in their own human condition, their own life journey, as we say, and it's not a straight line up. It's a line that has some people, it's peaks and valleys. For other, it's rolling hills. But, you know, we have different stages of life. In different stages of life, there's different challenges. And that, I think someone asked me, they were going to their 25th reunion, and they hated it. And they said, oh, it was awful. You know, people were walking around bragging about how great they were. I said, try the 50th, because by the 50th reunion, I went to Dominican and in San Anselmo, and I actually graduated from Lowell. But I went to the 50th reunion, and people had, you know, all people did was tell the truth. Because 68 years later, they'd been through enough in their life where their egos were pretty rolled around on the ground, and they had either developed some internal sense of who they really were and had a lot of compassion and humility, or they didn't come. And I think that, you know, does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course it does.
Okay. So this book is for real people who care about a wholehearted relationship, and they want to know the skills to get there. And I know the skills. So I hope that it is as helpful to people in out there who are reading it as it's been to all the hundreds of people that have taken our classes.
This episode is sponsored by Ritual. We want to tell you more about why we're big believers in all of Ritual's products, and we want to share a special offer for our listeners from Ritual.
You may have heard us talk about Ritual's essential protein products or Ritual's essential for women 18 plus multivitamin. And now we want to tell you about another great product from Ritual called Synbiotic Plus.
It's my daily 3-in-1 clinically studied prebiotic, probiotic, and postbiotic designed to help support a balanced gut microbiome. If your gut's telling you it needs a little support, Ritual has your back.
With Ritual's Synbiotic Plus, I get two of the world's most clinically studied probiotic strains to support the relief of mild and occasional digestive discomforts like bloating, gas, and diarrhea.
So why include a postbiotic? Well, it provides fuel to the cells that make up the gut lining, and it supports a healthy gut barrier.
Synbiotic Plus is a delayed release capsule that's designed to help survive the harsh conditions of the upper GI tract for delivery to the colon, an ideal place for probiotics to grow and thrive.
Synbiotic Plus comes in an all-in-one, single-nested, minty capsule. There's no refrigeration needed, so it's easy to take with you when you travel.
Synbiotic Plus and Ritual are here to celebrate, not hide your insides. It's time to listen to your gut. Ritual is offering our Nobody Told Me listeners 10% off during your first 3 months.
Visit ritual.com/NTM to start Ritual or add Synbiotic Plus to your subscription today.
All you have to do is visit ritual.com/NTM to start Ritual or add Synbiotic Plus to your subscription today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration, and this product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Visit ritual.com/NTM to start Ritual or add Synbiotic Plus to your subscription today. You always hear that communication is the most important thing in a relationship, yet so many of us are doing it wrong. And I would think it's only been complicated more by texting all the time and emailing and digitally. It's just screwed things up. So what are we doing wrong? What are the most common errors that you're seeing?
Well, I actually don't think that it is the most important thing. I think that generosity is the most important thing and willingness to learn. I think communication can get overrated. You know, we can learn the skills and do them in a way that's like robots. You know, I'm sure you've had the experiences of having someone say, yes, I hear you, but they don't. They're not there.
Mm-hmm.
I think what is most important is the human qualities. In fact, this is so interesting. And I'm going to go back to your question, but the University of Virginia did a study on what is the most important quality in a long-term relationship that is successful, not just one that goes the distance. And they thought it would be a lot of sex. Well, that's not what it was. It was generosity. That quality of generosity. And I think that that makes so much sense to me in terms of my own experience. Communication is important, and another issue about communication is it's one of the first places that people point to when they see me. They say we have trouble communicating, and these two articulate people are telling me it was very clearly where they struggle in communication. And I usually end up saying, you guys are great communicators. That's not the issue. It's communication under stress. That's where we get into trouble. Because under stress, we go into fear, we go into fight, freeze, or flight. And so we may think that we're in a grown-up body, but we're really seven. We're wanting to win. We're wanting to be heard. We're threatened by what our partner is saying. And then that's when the relationships go off the rails. So it's not usually the issue people come in with that's the real issue. And it's not that they don't know how to communicate. It's that communication under stress needs a whole different set of skill than how we normally communicate.
And what message would you have to us? What are the skills that we need to communicate best under stress?
Well, I think number one is recognizing when you are under stress. And one of the things that happens to some of us when we're under stress is our certainty gets bigger, not less. We get more convinced we're right. So what I say to people is when you know you're right, back off. Because that's often a sign that you're really under stress and you're threatened. So you want to push your point across. You know, how well does that go when somebody's trying to convince you that they're right? I mean, you don't just say, oh, I'm so glad you shared. Now I get it. That's not what happens. When we feel them energetically coming at us, telling us how it is, whatever that is, we get closed down, we back off, we could defend. So the first thing is to understand when you're under stress. And to know that is not the best time to talk, to actually do a counterintuitive move, which is to move the other way and to say, this isn't a great time. Let's do this tomorrow. I think the second thing is to know yourself, to know where you go under stress and what's actually getting triggered. Because another thing about the work that I've done for so long with couples and in my own marriage is that the issue is usually not what it seems to be. You know, it's not that you forgot the spinach. It's that I haven't felt like you've really listened to me for a long time. So forgetting the spinach was really not about the spinach. It was about feeling like you're not caring about me anymore. Or where did you go? Or I miss you. So understanding what's going on, and that comes to self-reflection, that great thing that Delphi said, know thyself. Because it's all self-work. So knowing I'm getting triggered, my husband says, it just happened this week. He said we were going to do something, and he said, I want to go skiing with my friend for 2 days. And my first reaction was feeling really angry. And that was very quick because I know myself. And right under that anger came, I felt like he was abandoning me. And right under that came sadness because I was going to miss him.
Uh-huh.
And right under that came fear because he would want to take our dog. And that all happened in about 10 seconds. And at the end of those 2 seconds, he said, how are you feeling? I said, I've gone through all the feelings and I think it's great. And I think, will you leave Jackson with me? And he went and he had a fabulous time. And I was fine. In fact, I sometimes love it when he goes for a few days. And I got lots of stuff done. But my first reaction was not it was not from my big self. It was from my very young little self. But I went through it. I didn't torment him with it. I could see it happen. I watched it come like waves. I thought, that's interesting. And oh, he's always saying to me, go do whatever you want. And he wants to go for these few days. And I want to say, no, how can you do it? So all of that happened in a very short period of time. And by the time I responded to him, I was so happy he was doing it, and I still am. But my first reaction was not that. It was something else. So knowing that and not responding from that first place, I guess another – so does that answer your question? Bring all kinds of tools. Here's another one about conflict.
Okay.
If you're stuck in an issue and you can't get past the issue, one of the most common reasons for that is because you're trying to solve the issue. Shall we move to New York or shall we buy a horse farm? You know, where you're really stuck. Shall we have a child or not? Those mm-hmm. big thorny issues. And you're trying to convince the other person. So one of the things that I teach people is to say, don't put the decision on for the first conversation or sometimes the second or even the third. No decision. You cannot make a decision, even if you both know. Take it off the table. So the first few conversations is really about listening. If I'm threatened with what you're saying, if I have the best job in the world and you want to explain to me why you're going to fire me, I'm not going to be open to listening. I'm going to be trying to convince you not to. Mm-hmm. Why you don't need me anymore on the show or whatever it is. So I'm not going to listen. So put the decision away and make it just a practice. And I think I think relationships are a practice in mindfulness. The practice is I'm going to try to understand your point of view. And for the partner, I'm going to try to understand yours. You don't have to change what your point of view is. But once you create some empathy for where your partner's coming from, that creates a bridge of connection. And then you might be ready to do the next part, which I call it the black belt of relationship, which again, it's skill. Most of us are not born knowing how to do it, which is being able to talk about a very threatening issue that you both feel the opposite about and staying connected, not losing that relationship. Even though you are maybe upset what your partner is saying or asking for, or sharing, you're still not getting so defended that you've disconnected from each other. And people can do that. I've seen people sit in the most unbelievable messes and stay connected to each other because they practiced that and because they knew how to talk about it.
And what do you do if you still can't get to a decision even after all of these extensive conversations and you guys are communicating well? You just can't decide on something big like moving or having a baby, like you said.
Well, that's when I think you bring somebody else in. You bring in a third party, a trusted elder, a therapist, a coach, someone that you feel like can hold a space for both of you that's bigger than the two of you. And I mean, sometimes it really comes down to a decision. I had a couple once who had the issue of they had gotten married very young and they had committed to a life of travel and never having kids and never settling down. And they worked it out. They had this amazing life. And the woman turned 39 and she said to her husband, I want a baby. And he said, I can't believe you did this to me, that you betrayed me like that. We agreed never. And they could not work it out. So they came to see me. And this is quite an amazing story. And I didn't know at the time. It was years and years ago. I mean, the baby's in college. But now I've told you the end of the story.
Spoiler alert.
What happened is I said I didn't know what to do. And so I pulled on this old communication skill that I learned when I was teaching interpersonal communication at the university. And I said, okay, let's do this. How about if you agree for 3 months to do two things, to explore your reasons for wanting or not wanting a baby, and also to try to understand the other person's point of view and no decision for 3 months? And they agreed to that because they really loved each other and they had a great relationship. So here's what happened. The man who did not want the baby really did some personal work. He went and saw a therapist of his own to look at why this was so strong in him. And what he came up with was, you know what? My parents, they were good parents, but they were not happy about us. They did all the right things, but I don't ever remember them just enjoying us. And I didn't want to experience that. I didn't want to bring kids into the world and do that. And I realized, he said, that I don't have to. I love kids. I can do it differently. Okay, I'm in. And what do you think his wife did?
Didn't want to have kids.
Yeah, he said, I realize that I have always wanted to be a writer, and I've tried, and I have not ever had anything accepted, and I got so scared, I thought, I have nothing I'll leave behind, so I better have a baby. And she said, I realize I don't really want a baby. I want to go back to school and get a master's in writing, and that's what I want to do. So now we had the reverse, right? Uh-huh. Anyway, we worked out. So then we had to do a whole other round. But the next round was he hated his job, And so they figured out how he could do it at home. They'd have one baby. He'd take care of the baby. She'd go off and get her advanced degree in writing. And that's exactly what they did. And it worked out really well. But they were willing to put aside what they wanted and explore what was so threatening. So that it doesn't always turn out that easy. That's a great story, but it's not always, you know, sometimes it really is a question of who wants it the most, who's willing to let go of what they want. Is there a trade in there? You know, there's all kinds of ways that you work things out and don't get what you want when you're in a relationship.
I also love another thing that you say. You say the times that feel the most perfect or intolerable between you and your partner will pass. Why?
Yes.
Why is that true? And why is it important to keep it in mind?
Because when it's wonderful, if you think it's going to be wonderful forever, you're going to think something's wrong. When you wake up on Monday and you know, and it's gray outside, mm-hmm. and you don't want to go to work, and your partner annoys you, and they can't find their wallet for the 10th time, and they forgot to get the kids' lunches made like they promised, and, you know, the dog has just eaten your shoe, and it all falls apart. And if you don't know that that's normal, you think something's wrong. You think that the great experience, that the great weekend was an illusion, and it wasn't. It was just life. And it's the same thing when you're really down, when you're in a really hard space in a relationship, which is inevitable, to think, oh, this is it. You know, this is the truth of the relationship. We have nothing in common. We fight about everything. And this is really, now we're at what it's really about. And it's usually not true. Sometimes it is, but it usually isn't. What it really is about is you've just had a bad day or a hard season. So, you know, long-term relationships, I did an interview with someone this morning who'd been married 40 years. And I said, one of the people said, oh, so-and-so's been happily married for 40 years. And I said, what would you say? And she said, I've been married for 40 years, some of it happy, some of it not so happy. And I said, now I believe you, because you don't stay happy for 40 years, because mm-hmm. life isn't like that. So, you know, the waves pass, though, mm-hmm. and they all pass. And that's all. I could keep talking, but I don't want to do that.
So when would you encourage couples to say, hey, this is it, we should throw in the towel and get a divorce or break up?
You know, it's a great question, and I'm always interested in that question. And my answer may surprise you, but I would never say that, because I know that I don't know who should be together and who shouldn't. I've sat with couples in messes that you would not believe. They would film a mini series for years. Mm-hmm. I mean, who, you know, just sat in a room with people who have just done all of the things you don't do, in breaking trust and breaking hearts and making messes, but they wanted to work it out, and they did. And some of the best marriages I know have come from the worst messes, because when things are okay, not great, but okay, you can stay okay. But when there's been a big disruption of trust, like in an affair, for example, the only way that you can make it better is go to the bottom of your psychological closet and clean it out. You have to really dive deep, and you've got to let the marriage go and start a new one. And so some of our friends who have had huge messes have the richest relationships, because they started all over and sort of cleaned themselves out. On the other hand, I've sat with people who seem to have everything going for them, but they decided to walk away. I was just thinking about a couple that I worked with, and they had a lot of trouble. They did everything right. They cleaned up the trouble. And I was thinking about them today, actually, and it was all great. And they left. And about 2 years later, I saw the man, and he was with another woman. He said, this is my wife. And I was really confused, like, wait a minute, that wasn't his wife. And then later he came up to me, by the vegetables, we were in the co-op. He said, you don't know that so-and-so and I got a divorce. I said, no, what happened? He said, well, you know, we put it all back together, but it just, there, and we care about each other, and we even have holidays together. But you know what? It was over. It was really done between us, and we're both remarried. I was sort of blown away. But so it seemed like they were really thriving. And he said we were, but there was something not there and something missing, that my other couple who had the huge mess, that whatever that was between them that was holding them together, they were going to fight for it. So I don't know who should be, I would never I would tell people to get out if they were in danger, if something dangerous was happening, for sure. But just in terms of your kind of normal trouble, I just say I'm like the plumber. I'm going to fix things so they work. If you do what I say, if you practice the skills, in other words, you know, I'm like going to the gym. I know the skills that make relationships work. If you practice the skills, it'll get better. And what you do with that is up to you.
What's the first thing you should do if you're trying to deal with betrayal? How do you work through that, and how do you regain trust?
Well, the first thing that you probably do, if you're the person who just found out, if it was your partner, the first thing you do is you probably go crazy. You know, you scream, you throw things, you say, I'm out of here. And then that's usually what happens, or you're devastated, or you call a friend. And that's like the shock and the trauma of it. And when that passes, I get called to work with couples with this all the time. And obviously the people I get called to work are ones who want to work something out. So I think the second thing is to try to understand what happened. The trust issue is complicated because, and if there's kids between you, I really encourage people to at least do some work together so that they don't move apart with all that mess that their kids have to live with in the middle. And it's amazing how people can work through this. But in terms of trust, the only way you can trust the person who has done the betrayal is if they do their own work about it, and if they realize that they have really damaged themselves by lying, by doing this. If you hear, you know, often what happens is somebody comes back and says, oh, I'm so sorry. I wish I'd never done that. I love you so much. I will never do it again. You can't trust that because love is a feeling, and the feeling will come and go. And 6 years again or 3 years again or whatever it is, there's going to be another season. And if I don't love you, if that's the only thing that's stopping me, then that's not a good way to come back into a marriage or a relationship. The work is really, why did I take that path? Why did I lie? Why did I hurt two people, the person in the affair, three, my partner and myself? And why didn't I go to my partner if it was in a relationship issue? And if I was feeling like I wanted more charge sexually, which is another reason, I mean, it's not always a relationship issue, that's the kind of thing you bring to your partner. It's not the kind of thing you go outside to get. So how did I do all this? And then how did I lie for all this time? And I've got to look at that in me because I'm worth healing that. And if a person does that and they do the work themselves, I think they can become incredibly trustworthy. But if they're just trying to appease their partner, then that's great. That's a good start, but it's not worthy of trust.
Mm-hmm. What advice would you have for new couples who don't want to get to the point where they have a huge relationship breakdown and want to have a way to kind of check in with each other every day and make sure the relationship is going well and that the other partner feels appreciated?
Do the work, learn the skills. I mean, I have a whole chapter on here called communication before conflict. And you're absolutely right. It's the daily sprinkles of goodwill that happen where you connect during the day. Even a little tiny bit can do a huge amount. My husband has brought me a latte just about every morning. That was the thing I said when he said he was going away. I said, what about my latte? for about 35 years. And, you know, he's brought me the latte with a kiss, with, you know, like, oh, I don't want to leave you this morning, with setting it on the table next to my bed, feeling, you know, not speaking to me because we're in a fight, or where he's preoccupied, he just sets it down and says, here's your latte. I've got to go. He's in all kinds of weather and seasons. He brings me that latte. But you know what? It starts every day for me with gratitude. Every day I think, wow, that's something. There's my latte. And you know, it's at the point now where I don't want me to go anywhere because I want my latte. I don't make lattes as well. But it starts the day with goodwill. It's shocking to me, someone who's been with somebody over three decades, how we have had times of living together in this house as intimately as we live together without even speaking practically. I mean, you know, speaking like, you know, can you pass the salt or how was your day, but not listening to each other, not really hearing each other, sort of missing each other for weeks on end. And so that some of the practices that I talk about in Love Skills are those daily practices of being present, even if it's 2 minutes a day. It makes a huge difference long term.
And you say there are actually four transition times during the day that people need to pay attention. When you wake up, obviously when you go to bed, and what else during the day?
When you leave for the day, when you come back during the day. And I sometimes if people are, they're so busy. I had a couple recently who came in, they were so busy, and they had a lot of trouble. And the guy said, this was actually a few years ago, but the guy looked at his watch. He said, I think we can fit in about 5 sessions over the next 4 or 5 months. So we've got it. Let's get down to it. I've got to leave. I've got an appointment right after. So we'll come once a month for 5 months, and then we should be okay, right? And I said, no, wrong person to come to. That, you know, they had multiple issues, but the biggest issue was time management. Mm-hmm. You know, so will you spend a couple of minutes every day? I have exercises in here that I've learned in some of the trainings that I've done that are great check-in exercises. Every day in appreciation, there's one. You can just do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people do this sometimes with their kids at mealtimes, high, low. You know, what was one good thing that happened? What was a challenge? We should be able to take that time with our partner and do that. Mm-hmm. And it makes a huge difference.
And as you know, our show is called Nobody Told Me. So at the end of each episode, we ask our guests, what is your Nobody Told Me lesson? So what is it about love and maintaining love that nobody told you that you wish you'd known 35 years ago when you first got married?
Nobody told me that love is a feeling and that feelings come and go and that they're not a basis for a relationship. They are a basis to explore a relationship. But instant love, which hit me when I was 11 years old, it had nothing to do with the quality of the other person. And
wow.
I've been on a meditation of that for a long time. What was that about? Mm-hmm. It was not about a compatible person. It had lots of components in it. That wasn't one of them. So nobody told me that love is a feeling and that feelings come and go and that a relationship is based on a skill set. And the first skill is know yourself. And the second skill is selecting someone who doesn't have a lot of red flags. You can have a lot of feeling and miss the flags. So pay attention. That's where you end up doing the whole time with another person, is if you select it well.
Boy, that is great advice.
Thank you. Yeah.
And Linda, how can people connect with you on social media and the internet?
Well, I'm on lindaacarroll.com is my website. If for people reading Love Skills, I've just started a closed Facebook group, which I will get on and talk to people and help them with the book, and they can talk to each other. I also have an Instagram account, which is Linda Carroll Official, and that's just getting juiced up. The last couple of weeks, I've had it for about 4 or 5 months, but it's really gotten good recently. And so everything else is on my website of Linda A. Carroll. My book's on all over. It's in bookstores, on Amazon. Love Skills and Love Cycles.
And Love Skills, the new one, is absolutely fabulous. It's just wonderful. Every single page.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
Our thanks to Linda Carroll. Again, her latest book is called Love Skills, The Keys to Unlocking Lasting Wholehearted Love. It's published by New World Library. And again, her website is lindaacarroll.com. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You're listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you so much for joining us.